We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Today on In the Trenches, we're going to talk next week's draft, which will happen next Thursday at 8 o'clock. You can catch it on a number of different channels. First round will happen on Thursday, second round on Friday, everybody else on Saturday. And we've got a lot of Michigan players that will be taken throughout the course of the draft. So we're going to get a chance to talk about that today on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
Sorry, Badger fans, but I would put the Cornhuskers in there.
Boy, I did not expect the tail end of this podcast to be John Jansen sticking up for Nebraska. That's not very much on brand for John Jansen.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends. And I want to make sure to bring in my friend early in this podcast, and that's Brian Bush. You get a chance to hear him on Defend the Block, which comes out on Wednesdays. That was yesterday. You can also listen to more Michigan Athletic information on Conquering Heroes. This week was an unbelievable week following a terrific weekend, and it is the championship edition of In the Trenches, following a women's gymnastics national championship as well as a women's tennis Big Ten championship. So if you want to go back and listen to those, they are available at the same place you found this one, and that is MGO Blue Podcast with John Jansen. But Mr. Bush, welcome in. How are you today?
I'm great, John. Yeah, if you have not heard the interview John had with Bev Plotky after that national championship, it was really fun to watch it over the weekend. Special, special performance. To have it come down to, in essence, the last routine, the last moment. That was 3 seconds on the clock, down by 2 points. You make a field goal, you throw a touchdown. That was pretty darn cool.
It was a lot of fun. And for Bev, she mentioned it, and I'll mention it here. It was on ABC, so everybody around the world had an opportunity to see that moment, to celebrate with them. And the special thing about it, as she mentioned, and I don't want to ruin the entire thing because I'd love you to go listen to her, and you could hear her excitement, is over the course of her 3 decades at Michigan, there's a lot of alumni that have worked and built this program up to where it is, and they all got a chance to watch on TV the program that they obviously love and still support. So it was a great moment for gymnastics and for Bev Plotky. I'm such a big fan of hers and what she's done for Michigan athletics, for the women's gymnastics program. And she's just a great person to know.
Yeah, she's an icon in Michigan athletics history, and, well, she got her natty, and that's really cool to see. John, let's talk some football. We've got basically a 7 from 77 complete edition. That will be it here today as we talk plenty of drafts, as John alluded to. But first, some news within the program with Matt Dudek, the former director of recruiting since all the way back in 2017. He is heading to Mississippi State. As first reported by 24/7 Sports and by some other outlets, former Wolverine Courtney Morgan is set to take on the equivalent of Dudek's role at Michigan. That has not been announced or confirmed by the program yet. But, John, your thoughts on the assumed shuffle and on Courtney Morgan himself?
Courtney is a great dude. And you know what? First, I want to say thank you to Matt Dudek for the time that he spent here in Ann Arbor. He did a tremendous job, and he worked hard in recruiting players and developing that department, and we wish him the best of luck. But when you bring in a former player in Courtney Morgan, who there's a lot of respect that he has garnered, or not just around college football, but in the NFL, and the relationships that he's been able to develop, those are all pluses in the column when you think about pros for Courtney Morgan in recruiting today's athlete. I think he's got a great eye for talent, and there's so much that goes into, you know, continuing to develop this program and to develop the recruiting base. And Courtney understands, you know, obviously being a former player here, the traits that you're looking for in a student athlete. He's also looking at these athletes have to understand what it means to come to Michigan and what it means to be not just an athlete at Michigan, what it takes to be a student at Michigan, to be successful as a student at Michigan, the sacrifices that you have to make. I couldn't be more excited for him to be in that position and just ready for him to get up and running.
Number two on our 7 from 77. Of course, recruiting has become such a scrutinized part of the college football world. Recruiting has been covered in a way that it just wasn't 10, 15, 20 years ago. Take us inside that position. How does that role help to bring a class together, interact with coaches who, of course, have other responsibilities to worry about in and out of season, just to consistently enhance a program's talent?
Well, Courtney is great at building relationships, and he's going to continue to build those relationships with the coaching staff. And that's important for his position because he needs to know what the coaches are looking at. He needs to be able to sift through all the thousands of individuals that either send him film or he gets a tip on a kid that's playing over here or over there, and be able to look and say, yep, this is somebody that we want to take a further look at. I'm going to send this one up to the coaches. This one, not right now, maybe a little bit later. But again, it's building relationships with those high schools and those high school coaches as well. And if you've ever come in contact with Courtney Morgan, he is a guy that has very few enemies. And that is because he's a likable guy. He can relate to everybody. And he does a great job of just being a conversationalist and being able to, when you talk to him and you walk away from somebody of you know, like Courtney, you walk away like, wow. You know what? He made that whole conversation about me, and I really wanted to talk about him, or I wanted to talk about somebody else, but you feel special. And he just has that ability to, you know, refocus the conversation on the recruit, on the parents, on the university. And I think that's going to be a huge asset for him. But for the coaches, he's going to be a vital tool in paring those things down. In regards to, hey, here's what you're looking for at the quarterback position. Here's what we're looking for at the offensive line position, at the defensive line position, all of the different things that you need. And he's also, I think, going to do a great job of, hey, here's a guy that might be positionless. And how can we use a great athlete, a great individual, how can we utilize them at Michigan and making sure that we get a chance to look at those guys as well. He also understands the importance of recruiting the states of Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, where so much talent comes out of, the footprint that Michigan is in. You've got to win those states, and you've got to at least pull some kids out of Ohio. You've got to pull some kids out of Pennsylvania. Those kids that grew up understanding what Big Ten football is. They grew up understanding what the rivalry between Michigan and Ohio State is and means, between Michigan and Michigan State, what it means to play against a team like Notre Dame. Hey, I get a chance to go home if I'm from Pennsylvania and play against the team that's in my state, in Penn State. All of those things are, you know, what It's a wide ranging and all encompassing position, but I think he's going to do a great job of helping and being a tool that the coaches can use. And this program is so lucky to be able to have him in that position.
Number three on this week, 7 from 77. We learned this week that 4-star wideout Xavier Worthy out of California, he's electing to leave the program as asked out of his national letter of intent. What have you heard about this situation, and how does it open the door? We know the known commodities of that Michigan wide receiver room: Ronnie Bell, Mike Sanristil, Cornelius Johnson. But now with he and Giles Jackson gone, you have to imagine the two other true freshmen that were set to come in, Andrel Anthony and Christian Dixon. This gives them an extra opportunity, maybe a little bit of a clearer path to some playing time this fall.
It will. And, you know, out of respect for Xavier Worthy, a young man that in a year where you were limited in regards to being able to get on campus, in a year where you were limited in somewhat building those relationships. Yes, you can build them over Zoom. Yes, there's a lot of different things that other players, other programs have been able to do. You're going to find there is a lot of individuals that had to make a decision on where they were going to spend their next 4 or 5 years. And it was a tough decision to make simply because they didn't know, you know, that much about stepping foot on campus or being at a football game. And you know what? It's 17, 18 year old kids are going to change their mind for any number of reasons, and that's okay. But when you start talking about Michigan and their depth chart, yes, you know, you've got Ronnie Bell at the top of the list. You've got a Mike Sanristil, you know, Cornelius Johnson, who those guys, you're relying on them for the bulk of what you're trying to attack, you know, accomplish as an offense. But when you have, you know, openings, you have opportunities. Andrel Anthony, hey, you know what? It takes one more person out of that room, and you know, instantly you get bumped up. More is expected of you as a young player. Christian Dixon, you could go right down the list of all of the receivers in that group. You know, without Giles Jackson there, without Xavier Worthy, hey, you're going to be expected to step up. And that is when you come to Michigan, it doesn't matter what position you are, all you want is an opportunity. And they're going to have that opportunity, you know, ever increasing in that position group.
Number four, before we get into the NFL draft discussion, do want to get your thoughts. Several outlets reporting that former Wolverine Joe Milton has committed to Tennessee as a grad transfer. Your thought on that move as the week one 2020 Michigan quarterback is likely heading to the SEC?
I think we'll see if it's a good fit or not. I don't think he goes there as the, you know, incumbent starter. He's going to have to battle as well there. The one thing I will say about Joe Milton, I am proud of him for attaining his degree at the University of Michigan. He will find, as all of these athletes that get that degree will find, that that is about the number one asset that you will leave Ann Arbor with for the rest of your life, having a degree that says the University of Michigan on it. And then you look at, you know, maybe it was the competition here. Maybe it was, you know, there was just something that he wanted to move on from. And we wish him the best down at Tennessee. I hope he does well down there. You know, the question I get asked all the time is, well, what if he does well down there? Couldn't we have seen that at Michigan? Sure, there's a lot of variables. There's a lot of things that could happen. And all of us in Ann Arbor hope that he does well. None of us are going to sit there and say, well, we don't want him to do well because, you know, he could have done that here. We want him to do well. It's a new opportunity for him. He's going to go down to the SEC, and I'm excited for him to have that opportunity.
Yeah, and you said it. I mean, for him to be able to get the degree, it gives him a chance to transfer immediately. He earned that right, and he got a degree here. Wish it would have worked out a little bit better on both ends, but hey, that's how college football works. All right, let's get into the John Jansen NFL mock draft. John, I don't want to waste our fine listeners' time. I assume at one you have Trevor Lawrence and at two you have Zach Wilson. Is that fair?
That would be extremely fair.
All right. So Jacksonville and the Jets are off the clock. I hope on Thursday night they do this and just announce the picks and move on to number three and not play it out for 20 minutes. They will not, spoiler alert. But John, the third pick, the San Francisco 49ers are on the clock.
It's interesting because when you look at Kyle Shanahan's offense and you hear from John Lynch, their general manager, a lot of things are being talked about in regards to drafting Mac Jones at that number three. And most people have slotted him in there. I don't think that is a foregone conclusion. The draft will start at the number three spot with the 49ers. They gave up a lot of draft capital to move up to that number three spot. There's no way that they don't take a quarterback. I think it's going to be Justin Fields. When you look at his skill set and the way that he can develop in that offense. Yes, they've got Jimmy G there right now, but he's going to move on at some point within the next calendar year. And Justin Fields will be a great addition to that offense. He's a mobile kid. He's accurate, which is, you know, my number one thing that I would want from a quarterback if I draft him at any point, but especially this high in the first round. 2 years ago, when he had a full season at Ohio State in the regular season, he threw for 40 touchdowns and only one interception. And I know, obviously, things changed when they got into the playoffs. Things were different this year. I still think he's a very accurate passer, and he's a perfect fit for that Kyle Shanahan offense. At number four, I think this is whenever you have something happen that is different and from the expectations, and that is Justin Fields going three instead of Mac Jones. Now, all of a sudden, Atlanta is sitting there with the option of, hey, we've got Matt Ryan at quarterback. Do we want to take another quarterback and let him sit and learn behind a very good quarterback? I don't think, and we've heard from Arthur Blank, he likes this quarterback class. I don't necessarily think that we see them pass on the opportunity to draft a quarterback because you don't know what the quarterback situation is going to be next year. You also don't know where you're going to be drafting. Atlanta is a team that, you know, for whatever reason, they're obviously drafting number four. They're not, in terms of talent, a number four team. I don't think they're going to be drafting in the top 10 next year. So it would make sense that they would take the opportunity to take a Mac Jones. I think Mac Jones goes at that number four spot, whether it's Atlanta or you could look at New England, who's picking at 15. They would have to give up, obviously, their number 15 and probably a first next year, but they're a team that has gone and spent in free agency. By the time Mac Jones is ready to go in another year, because Cam Newton is probably going to be their starter this year, Mac Jones would be a great fit in that offense. And I don't know if you've seen the documentary, Brian, The Art of Coaching. And that is kind of it's about the relationship between Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. I had a chance to watch it the other day. It's very interesting. And the relationship that they have, the way they talk. And I know that Bill Belichick would get all of the insight from Nick Saban on what Mac Jones can do, what he can't do, how he would fit in the New England Patriots offense. So look for that to be a possible trade at that number four. But Mac Jones, whether it's Atlanta or New England, I think goes four.
So I'm curious, before we get to Cincinnati at number five, we know the Bengals won't take a quarterback, but is that the way you would order the quarterbacks, Lawrence, Wilson, Fields, Jones, or would you have Fields ahead of Wilson? How do you order those top four and then Trey Lance?
That's pretty much where I would have them. Trey Lance to me is very interesting because, and I'll just give a little spoiler alert. He is not in my top 10 because he is going to be a guy that is going to need to go to a team that will develop him. He can't be thrown out there right away. There is a big difference between going to North Dakota State and the speed at which they play at and the speed of defenses and what you're going to see in the NFL. It's going to take some time for him to be able to assimilate to the NFL game. And you got to have a team that maybe has a quarterback. You know, I think the Lions would be a good fit if they were in a different position than they are at the start of a rebuild right now, you know, obviously picking at seven. So I would have them, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, and then Trey Lance coming in at number five.
All right, so number five to the Bengals. This is where I think it gets interesting locally for Detroit fans because I think there are several players that the Bengals would be targeting, the Lions also would be. So who do you got going to Cincy?
I think they go with Penei Sewell. There's a chance you could see Ja'Marr Chase at that number five position, but with Joe Burrow coming back after having knee surgery, and you know what, they're going to be able to get quality receivers later in the draft. Penei Sewell is I don't want to say he's a generational talent, but he is a very good offensive tackle. They could continue to build that offensive line, protect their quarterback, give him a little bit more time, give that run game a chance. I think Penei Sewell goes five to Cincinnati.
I think if you're playing fantasy football, Burrow to Chase is really interesting, but in real life football, if he's there at five and the Bengals don't take him, I have no idea what they're thinking. You've got to protect your number one pick quarterback. I mean, they showed the cut in his knee from surgery when they were unveiling their new jerseys. If that doesn't tell you they need an offensive lineman, I'm not sure what will. Number six, John, Miami. To me, one of the more confusing decisions. They traded down to 12 to get a bunch of picks, and then they traded up to six with who knows who's going to be there and gave up a first rounder. They could have waited until draft day. Now they're talking about potentially trading down a little bit. What do you think happens here?
I think Miami holds on to that pick. They're going to see what type of value they can get for that number six pick and continue to build draft choices. But with Tua Tagovailoa being their quarterback, I don't see them going and drafting a quarterback. What I do see them doing is trying to decide between Ja'Marr Chase and Kyle Pitts. Those are the two top receivers in this draft. Kyle Pitts is unique in the matchup nightmare that he creates. I know that a lot of people have hesitation because he has that tight end moniker behind his name, but he is a pass catcher. Yes, he can block, but I find it very unlikely that he will have his hand in the dirt very often. He's going to be in the slot. They're going to line him up as a receiver. The way that he runs, and it's not just his numbers in terms of running a 4.4 or, you know, his arm length, all that stuff, but it's the intangibles, the things that you look at and you say, all right, he runs great routes. There wasn't a corner in the SEC this year that could really cover him. I think that he would be very hard to pass up on, but I do think Miami goes with Ja'Marr Chase. They give Tua Tagovailoa another weapon. Ja'Marr Chase, even though he sat out last year, was a number one receiver that LSU had, and we saw the year that Justin Jefferson had last year. Miami is hoping that Ja'Marr Chase comes in and does the same thing for them, and they're going to go at number six with Ja'Marr Chase.
So that opens up some interesting possibilities for the Lions at seven. If you're Detroit, you're thinking, hey, four out of the first six are quarterbacks. That's pushing the best player available down. They don't really need Kyle Pitts with TJ Hockenson, so where do they go?
Well, they could use Kyle Pitts. And earlier, in the draft process, I talked a lot about having him at wide receiver and, you know, in terms of his numbers. You know, he's very comparable to a Calvin Johnson. Now, I want everybody to not slam on your brakes. Don't drive off the road. I'm not saying he's the next Calvin Johnson. But his time in the 40, his height, his strength, his size is very comparable. And that's why I want people to understand that he is not your typical tight end. He's unique. I think the Lions look and say, okay, what is our strength going into next year? And it's a little bit hard to find because they need so much. Ideally, you'd want to trade back, get some more picks, get some more talent. But I'm not going to put any trades in this right now. I'm going to say that they go with Rashawn Slater, the offensive lineman out of Northwestern. Their offensive line would be the strength of this team right now. With Taylor Decker at left tackle, Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragnow at center. They've got a good left side. And I think if you look and you say, okay, Rashawn Slater, we can play him at guard, we can play him at tackle. If somebody gets hurt, we can swing him wherever we want, but he's got speed, he uses his hands well, he's an intelligent player, he processes things extremely well, which you would expect coming out of not just Northwestern, but a Pat Fitzgerald team. I think that would be a great addition to this Lions team because, like I've mentioned, you can get good receivers later in the draft. Yes, they need a tremendous amount of help on defense, but you can also get some more of that in the mid rounds.
I will say, if Kyle Pitts is available at seven, I would not be surprised if the Lions are able to trade down in that situation. All right, number eight, Carolina. where the Panthers go.
I think actually if the Lions don't trade and Kyle Pitts is available, they're going to say, you know what, hey, we're going to give Sam Darnold a weapon and we're going to go with Kyle Pitts at number 8. I know that it's not their highest need. They were probably hoping to get either a Penei Sewell or Patrick Surtain. I'm sorry, not Patrick Surtain, a Rashawn Slater. But that's where I think they go and they just say, hey, we didn't think he would fall this far. We can't pass up on an unbelievable talent. There's no lock in the draft. And if you ask most people, they'll say, hey, we believe Trevor Lawrence is going to be good. We also probably have the highest belief that Kyle Pitts is going to be good. So Kyle Pitts goes to Carolina at number 8.
You told us that Trey Lance is not in your top 10. I think many believe if he gets to 9, Denver's a candidate. So in your eyes, who are they passing Trey Lance for?
There's indications that I think are showing they're going to stick with Drew Lock as their quarterback for now. Is that their quarterback for the future? Maybe not. But they need so much help on defense. And with an aging defense, their stars on defense are getting a little bit older. I think they actually go Micah Parsons. We're going to see our first defensive player taken off the board. Micah Parsons goes to Denver. He's a guy that obviously we saw in the Big Ten. We didn't get a chance to see him last year, but we're going to get a chance to watch a player, I think, of extreme talent go to a defense that is going to allow him to get after the quarterback. He is a sideline-to-sideline linebacker. He can be an edge rusher. He can add a lot to a defense that needs a lot.
Yeah, the Broncos have produced some stud defenders over the years. Micah Parsons has that ability. Lastly, the Cowboys, John, finish off your top 10. I know they're probably thinking defense too.
They are, and this is where I think Patrick Surtain, who in my estimation is actually the best defensive player on the board, I think he goes to Dallas. They need help in a lot of different places, but in the secondary, definitely they need some help. Patrick Surtain is a guy that is coming, you know, the bloodlines you cannot question. Coming out of Alabama, you've seen a number of defensive backs come out and be very successful. Guarding the receivers that he guards in the SEC, it will be very similar to what he sees in the NFL. He's a guy that more than anybody in this draft has seen man-to-man coverage, has, you know, been put in press coverage, but he does a great job of being able to sell the fact that, hey, maybe this guy is open. Oh, wait, no, he's not. Here comes Patrick Surtain. So he toyed a little bit with some guys in the SEC. You won't see that as much in the NFL because of the talent at that receiver position. The only thing that I think is a drawback, because he's got great coverage skills, great recognition, is he doesn't have top-end speed. But that can obviously, in processing plays, that makes you play faster, and it can cover up some of that. So I think we're going to look at Patrick Surtain going to Dallas if we're not seeing any trades in this top 10.
Yeah, I mean, that outside of Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson, I think that's been the most common draft pick and team combination is 10, Surtain to Dallas. All right, number 6, John. No Wolverines in that top 10, but many expect Kwity Paye to be a first-round pick. Let's talk about perfect fits. If you could drop some of these Wolverines on an NFL roster, where would you put them? We start with the likely first-rounder, Kwity Paye.
I think Kwity Paye would be a great fit in Indianapolis, and I believe they picked 21. Which is about where, I mean, there are some mocks that have him going a little bit higher, but if he can get to that 21 and get to a team that, we've seen him make a trade for the quarterback in Carson Wentz, this is a team that really what they need on defense, they've got great play inside. Get another edge rusher. Now all of a sudden you put a great run game with a great pass game and you start putting pressure on other quarterbacks with a player like Kwity Paye. Things would be looking really good for the Indianapolis Colts.
How about Jalen Mayfield, who some think might sneak into the back end of the first round, probably though a day 2 pick. Your thoughts on where Jalen Mayfield would slot in best?
For me, the ideal fit, the absolute ideal fit would be late in the first round going to the Kansas City Chiefs. They had to let both of their tackles go. We know the what it cost them to have injuries at that tackle position when they got into the playoffs, and it became very apparent in the Super Bowl. It's going to take him a year or two to be playing at an extremely high level. There's still a lot of development that needs to happen. He missed a lot of time last year because of injury. But I think if he can get to a team like the Kansas City Chiefs and an offense like Andy Reid, I think that would be an absolute ideal fit. Plus, it gets him into the first round.
Cam McGrone, your thoughts on the Michigan linebacker?
Cam McGrone is unique. He's got good size, good speed, but again, and we talk about this is going to be a conversation that we have about a lot of athletes, not just the Michigan athletes, but a lot of athletes where you just didn't see a lot of development, you know, this past year. Some of that was because players opted out. Some of it was due to injury. Some of it was lack of games to actually play. Cam McGrone, I think if he can go to a team maybe like a Buffalo, that, you know, I know that they've got a good linebacking core, but you can never have too many good linebackers. He could be a guy that would fit in at a number of positions, whether it's the Mike linebacker or it's a Sam or a Will. He has that skill set to be able to fit in, but I don't really see him going probably until the third round at the earliest.
I'm going to throw my prediction. My Cleveland Browns have two picks in the third and the fourth round, and they need linebackers, and they've taken a linebacker in each of those last two drafts around there. So I'm telling you, end of day two, Cam McGrone, Cleveland Browns. All right, Nico Collins, interesting piece in a deep wide receiver class. Your thoughts on Nico?
I think Nico did himself a lot of favors after the season. Obviously, he opted out, but what I've heard from scouts, what I've heard from everybody that's been able to see him, that they think he's got a great upside. And there are still some question marks about his ability to catch the ball in traffic and to utilize all of the skills that he has. He's obviously a tall player at 6'5". He can go up and get some balls, but he just needs to show it on a more regular basis. I think because this receiving group in this draft is so deep yet again, and it was last year, he is going to be a guy that provides great value in the third or fourth round. And I would look at a team, and selfishly, I would look at a team like Detroit and say, you know what? You guys need receivers. You don't have a go-to big receiver. Nico Collins could be a guy that if you pass on a receiver, you know, Ja'Marr Chase or Kyle Pitts in the first round, that you go in the third round and you can really start to develop some depth and some talent at that receiver position.
I love that fit. I think that'd be a great opportunity for both sides. Speaking of an opt-out, Ambry Thomas, I think he's got a chance to be a legit NFL player. Where do you think he would fit best?
Well, you look at teams that need, help in the secondary. And quite honestly, other than maybe the Rams, other than maybe, I don't know what teams would have two great corners, anybody could use a talent like Ambry Thomas. I think if Philly doesn't go secondary in rounds one or two, that would be a great fit. That he could find some playing time early and develop along with obviously, we know Slay, who was with the Lions, is there in the secondary, a guy that he could learn from. Philly would be a great fit for him. And that division, I think, would allow him to, you're not looking at great quarterback play other than, you could argue Dak Prescott. I'll argue that on another forum. But, that's an area in a division where I think he could get his feet underneath him, get him wet a little bit, and excel.
One of the 32 teams will draft a new fan favorite in the bench, Ben Mason. Such an interesting player, an interesting prospect, what he could bring to the table. Where do you want to see Bench Mason end up?
I want to see him. I don't care where he ends up. I just want to see him in an NFL uniform. I want to see him get a chance because he is a try-hard guy with a lot of talent. There's not a lot of teams that use that, obviously, the fullback position. But if you look at teams like and before we got on here, we talked about Baltimore. They could use him. And we know that they have an affinity towards some Michigan guys. New England is, I think, a place where they're creative enough offensively, and they love Michigan. Michigan guys. You look at Green Bay, Minnesota, teams that still on occasion utilize a fullback position, and they can use them in a lot of different ways. It just doesn't have to be lined up, behind the quarterback and in front of the running back as a lead blocker. He's a guy that they can use in a lot of different ways, as well as on special teams. If you're looking for a team out west, San Francisco would be lucky to have him as a late round pick.
Yeah, it'd be pretty cool to see Ben Mason blocking for a Cam Newton or a Lamar Jackson touchdown run. That'd be pretty neat. Last guy that we've seen on some mock drafts, Chris Evans. I think in that circumstance, you just want him to go somewhere where he's going to have a path to some playing time. Any fits you think would be ideal for him?
You look at some of the creative offenses that they want to have a guy that can run the ball, that they can hand the ball off to, but also a guy that can line up in slot. And Chris Evans is that unique talent where he's not going to be in the NFL a guy that you hand the ball to, 20 times or even 15 times in a game. Maybe it's, two or three times, five times at the most as a change of pace back, but you can line him up in the slot. You can throw him the ball out of the backfield. And again, I look at some of the creative offenses like a Baltimore or a New England that have found ways to maximize individuals' talents. I don't know that Chris Evans is a guy that gets drafted. He's kind of that, if a team has an eye on an individual and that individual is no longer available, maybe they take a shot on a Chris Evans. But for him, he's probably that undrafted free agent who will have an opportunity to look around the NFL and say, okay, there's a good fit for me. There's a good opportunity. He's going to have to look at offenses, depth charts, offensive coordinators, and find out what is the best fit for him.
Yeah, and sometimes if it's a seventh round selection or you're an undrafted free agent, I think a lot of guys would rather have the latter of those two because then they can pick where they get to go. A seventh round pick, yeah, I mean, it's cool to get drafted, but you're still then succumbing to what the team thinks and what the team situation is. At least if you're an undrafted free agent, you can kind of pick where you go. Doesn't guarantee anything. There's no draft capital behind you, but it's still something relevant. All right. Lastly, John, number seven, the other football had quite a week. I don't know if I understood this about as much as I got the GameStop stuff or Bitcoin or all those other cryptocurrency stuff. But the Super League in English soccer came and went this week. We've seen some people come up with their college football Super League. I created one. Do you have one?
Yes, I do have one. And it's somewhat interesting because when you start limiting teams and you start saying, okay, who's going to be left out or who would be left out, you've got to figure out, hey, that's you start eliminating teams and it's very, very curious. I'd love to hear yours first.
So let's do it this way. To me, it was easy for the top 10. And I'd be shocked if you didn't have any of these 10. I thought that was, if we were creating a 10-team group, I feel like it'd have been a heck of a lot easier. I'll go in alphabetical. But these were the 10 that when I went through, no-brainer, you put them in. Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, LSU, Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas, USC.
Okay, yes, I don't know that I have any arguments with that. So you've got Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, LSU, Michigan. Who were your last five?
Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas, and USC. Those were the no-brainers. Then it started to get interesting. So I did kind of a bracketology, last five in, first five out. These are in order. My number 11 was Florida. Number 12 is Penn State. Number 13 is Auburn. And then this was where I was really struggling because I didn't know what to do with Miami and Florida State. So they're my first two out, and I put in Oregon and Wisconsin because I'm trying to make money and I want to spread stuff out. And I feel like even if with Oregon, with their Nike connection, and they're flashy for the youngsters, and Wisconsin, that solidifies the Midwest branch even more. So I put Oregon and Wisconsin, and I left Miami and Florida State out just because I felt the South was represented really well. And boy, when those teams aren't that good, I don't feel the same type of oomph behind them as opposed to some of these other teams if they aren't good.
Well, Brian, the only one that I disagree on, and this is splitting hairs, and there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings. A lot of former teammates are going to be hurt on this. You have Wisconsin in there, and I would put Nebraska in there just to get one of those flyover states in there. And when you talk about historically what you would want to see from a super league, I think Nebraska fits the bill right now, currently. Not so much, but if Scott Frost can get them fired back up, if they can continue to recruit, and if you're in a 15-team Super League, you are going to recruit. That's the difference I would have in there, because you've already got Michigan and Ohio State in the Midwest. Sorry, Badger fans, but I would put the Cornhuskers in there.
Boy, I did not expect the tail end of this podcast to be John Jansen sticking up for Nebraska. That's not very much on brand for John Jansen.
No, I just stay. I want to be fair and balanced and give you my thoughts exactly. So
Fair enough. Well, yeah, I think we're in agreement. Again, I had a tough time with Miami and Florida State. I had Nebraska as my third team out. Other ones I at least wrote down and considered in no particular order. I put Virginia Tech on there, Iowa, Washington, Tennessee, Texas A&M. Those were ones that kind of made my initial, hey, let's write down anyone I'd actually consider, and then they didn't make it through the editing process.
That's what happens. You know what? It's unique, too, and obviously the Super League is falling apart at the seams, and it only lasted, what, about 24 hours, maybe 48?
R.I.P.
We've heard over the course of the playoff era, and even before that a little bit, of the Power Five creating one gigantic super conference and separating from the NCAA. I think down the road, I don't know when that happens, I think we're heading in that direction. And what it all comes down to, and what the Super League was trying to do, maximize profits. And that's what will happen with college football. They're going to get to a point where they say, why are we subsidizing all of these other things? Let's just go ahead and hey, we've got great football. Let's focus on us and maximize profits. Whether you like it or not is not the question. But will it happen? I think at some point it's going to.
Yeah, and the answer isn't a 15-team Super League. It's probably bigger conferences and maybe a few fewer of the quote-unquote power conferences. But yeah, it's a fun exercise. It was definitely interesting. John, before we let our fans go, we have to have a bacon fact, even though there is no interview today. So the world's most expensive bacon sandwich was called a Bacon Buddy. A man by the name of Heston Blumenthal created it for an astronaut, Tim Peake. Peake was getting set for a 6-month trip within the International Space Station. It was held in a can for transport. And the reason why it was so expensive is because it took 2 years for Peake to create this to A, hold up without gravity, and B, it has to be approved by the world space agencies. You can't just, you know, bring up a burrito or some other item of food and just let it go. It's got to, you know, do something specific with that. And apparently transporting it added $2 million to the budget. I don't totally get that, but they put this research, transportation, and actually the creation of it at $2.8 million for a bacon sandwich. It better have been good.
Is that just one, or is that for the totality of the trip? Because I would imagine that every pound that you have as you send this astronaut into space, every pound has a cost to it. And then every pound while you're at the space station would have a cost to it. And then because it's a can, you have waste. What do you do with that waste? I'm sure that has a cost to it. But $2.8 million, boy, it better be damn good.
Yeah. I mean, it's bacon, so it's got a chance, but whew.
I've heard about the $1 million bacon, and I see that on the menus every once in a while, but a $2.8 million bacon sandwich, it better be special. I can tell you that. But, hey, Brian, thanks for your time. Who was it again that you had on Defend the Block yesterday?
Austin Davis, Big Country. Good to catch up with him. And we talked to him a little bit about the dynamic. I mean, last year, he was hoping to be able to come back, got the invite just before the world stopped. And this year, he does have the opportunity to come back. All seniors do, but he wanted to move on. It looks like he's going to be attempting to play overseas. So he talks about that thought process, about reflections on the season and his time here, his relationship with Juwan Howard. Really cool, about 20-minute interview with Austin. Fun to catch up with guys after they leave, because then you can talk to him about the fun stuff and about the reflections. It's very much one game at a time, one day at a time, in the flow of things. But when you get to that reflection point, it's definitely fun.
Well, that's Defend the Block with Brian Bush and Austin Davis this week. On Tuesday, Conquering Heroes came out, and it was the championship edition. The headliner, Bev Plotky, and headliner because they won their first national championship as a program, becoming the seventh program across the country to win a national championship in women's gymnastics. They did it with the third highest score ever. So Bev Plotky joined us, as well as Ronnie Bernstein, who a program record 10th Big Ten championship, her ninth since she's been at the University of Michigan. So hats off to both of those coaches, Ronnie Bernstein, women's tennis, Bev Plotky. If you want to hear that one, it's on Conquering Heroes podcast, Brian Bush on Defend the Block. And for all your Michigan football insight as we approach next week's draft, we talked a lot about it today. We'll have more on it next week because it will begin on Thursday night. And throughout the course of this offseason, just to give you a little bit of the plan, we will, within the next 4 to 6 weeks, be talking to some personalities across the Michigan football schedule. I think we alluded to that last week, but we will have some preview additions coming up for Michigan's football season that'll take us through the summer, as well as a look back to and talk to some of football alumni. And as always, getting updates from Coach Harbaugh, from the program. So anything that you want in Michigan football, you'll find it right here on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network. MGo Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.